This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
We are now 10 weeks in advance of the 2024 presidential election. And because of that, we're going to continue what we have been doing, which is in the second half of the program, taking a look at some of the excellent material that's available online and repeating it with, of course, some of our commentary added to boost the value of the production. At least we hope. So yes, in our second half today, we're going to again return to the Midas Touch YouTube channel, do some excerpts and talk about it. And close off with some words of wisdom, perhaps wisdom from our pal Greg Palast. The topic, which is going to dominate the second half of the show, will be the evil alliance of Robert Kennedy Jr. and Donald J. Trump. And although we're going to end with RFK, I don't think it would hurt to start with him as well. It turns out that his running mate, his vice presidential running mate, Nicole Shanahan, the ex of Larry Page, founder of Google, and a very, very rich woman, was quoted just before Bobby Jr.'s jumping ship on everything his family stands for by noting that their campaign, having secured access to ballots in only 24 states, saw two options, quote, stay in the race and risk helping Vice President Kamala Harris win the election, or walk away right now and join forces with Donald Trump. Yes, apparently the Google X thinks it's a risk to have Kamala Harris get elected. She's certainly not alone among Silicon Valley bigwigs in thinking along these lines. Elon Musk has come on board the Trump train in a big way.
All aboard!
We should have known something was up when that donor, Silicon Valley donor, whose name escapes me at the moment, who was donating something like, I don't know, was it 25 million or 75 million? I lose track of the millions. He also decided to throw RFK a bone and donate many millions of dollars to him as well. Anyway, great minds and perhaps not so great minds do tend to think alike. And we have to confess, we're pretty stunned at the fact that Bobby Jr. did what he did. It's true, we think he's an idiot and pretty much have no respect for him whatsoever, but we were still a bit taken aback. I think what I'll do is seek some relief from the oddball file and see if I can find something that's even stranger to ponder, although less important, a lot less important. But here's the story that I'm intrigued by. Apparently, sharks swimming off Rio de Janeiro, down in Brazil, have ingested quite a bit of cocaine, according to a study published last week, which showed how marine biologists tested 13 Brazilian sharp-nosed sharks and found high levels of the drug, up to 100 times more than ever before detected in marine animals. It was found in their muscles and their livers. And no, we have no idea what prompted marine biologists to test sharks for cocaine.
Maybe we should test the marine biologists for cocaine.
Well, that I would understand. Anyway, researchers from the Oswaldo Cruz Institute say the coke probably got into the ocean through drainage from illicit drug labs and from untreated sewage, which can contain human waste from drug users. Call me skeptical. The reporting noted that it is possible the sharks could have swallowed bales of cocaine tossed overboard by drug smugglers. But researchers said this was far less likely. And while it was speculated that exposure to cocaine probably in some way harmed the shark's health, there was no evidence it increased aggressiveness. And I think I'll go to the obituary column to find an item that's quite a contrast to the actions of RFK Jr. I'm referring in this instance to the passing of Phil Donahue. The obits noted that Donahue invented a new TV genre almost by accident on the 1967 day when he taped his first talk show for a local station in Dayton, Ohio. Variety show had just been canceled. Donahue proposed letting that show's audience watch his taping and soon progressed to letting audience members ask questions. As it gained national reach, the Phil Donahue Show became a ratings powerhouse with a format that held steady for 29 years. A single guest holding forth on political and social issues while the silver-haired host prowled the aisles with a microphone, pulling audience members into the discussion. Donahue discussed AIDS and abusive priests. He hosted Nelson Mandela and six U.S. presidents. But, it was noted, it wasn't all highbrow, to say the least. He also featured orgy enthusiasts and lesbian go-go dancers, and once donned a dress for a show on cross-dressing. While all that is of passing interest, I'm focusing at this point on the fact that Donahue stood up for what he thought was right. Donahue's show was off the air by the mid-90s. He had too much competition from the likes of Oprah and what are described as tawdrier shows. At any rate, after doing 6,000 shows, he retired in 1996. But he returned to the airwaves in 2002 with a talk show on MSNBC. But it was canceled after 6 months. Apparently, the outspoken liberal opposed the Iraq War and refused to say it was a good idea, and that didn't sit well with some people. We would note that in May, he was awarded a Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Biden, which, as we've noted, former President Trump thinks is even better than the Congressional Medal of Honor. Because, referring to the soldiers who received the Medal of Honor, quote, they're either in very bad shape because they've been hit so many times by bullets, or they're dead. As opposed to the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is given to healthy, beautiful women. And an item we probably should cover at some point in the next 10 weeks would be the ever-growing danger of H5N1 bird flu, which has the potential of becoming a pandemic. I have a piece from a few months ago from New Scientist titled, How the U.S. is Preparing for a Potential Bird Flu Pandemic. All I can say is I hope we're better prepared for this one than we were for COVID. And our next brief item will require our favorite TV theme show fanfare. Yes, we just love John Williams' theme to Lost in Space. And although astronauts Butch Wilmore and Sunny Williams are not actually lost in space, they do appear to be stranded in space. Yes, the two went up on the Boeing-built spacecraft called the Starliner, I guess. They went up to the ISS on June 6th. But upon docking, there was some malfunctioning taking place on some of the thrusters, and they're described as still not in working order. So instead of returning to Earth 8 days later, the two appear to be stuck. And there's a complication here, apparently, that the spacesuits that Boeing is using to take them up are not the same as the spacesuits used for the alternative method of getting to the ISS via private means. That would be Elon Musk's SpaceX. So to bring the two back, they'd have to send up a SpaceX spacecraft with only two people on board and then come back with four. By the way, SpaceX isn't expected to visit the space station until next month. And there's some talk that due to complications, they may not be able to bring the duo back until February 2025. This is turning out to be quite a black eye for Boeing, which doesn't need any more black eyes. NASA pretty much put its eggs into, you know, two baskets using Boeing and SpaceX as its means to get up to the space station. There are alternatives. And by the way, when there have been snafus in the past, the simple solution was to drop back down to Earth in a Russian Soyuz space capsule. Right now, NASA is desperate to not go hat in hand to the Russians for a hitchhiked ride home. One sidelight to the coverage on this is the fact that India apparently is scheduling to fly a crew sometime in 2025 into space. I don't know that they're going to go ever visit the International Space Station, which, by the way, is scheduled to be decommissioned in or around 2030. Now, the station's been continuously occupied for the past 24 years, and if the truth be told, it never really achieved some of the goals that were set out for it. It was supposed to be able to do some very special science, it was supposed to be able to do some perhaps industrial manufacturing in zero-G conditions, etc., etc. Now, I read one account in New Scientist describing the ISS as the most expensive object ever made. Well, we're not sure how they came up with that, but maybe. Now, starting with the dawn of the space age, the average over the first few decades was something like, I don't know, 200 objects put into space on a yearly basis. I think that's heavily weighted toward more recent times, but these days Elon Musk is going to put up thousands. He's already put up, I think, like 6,000 objects. And the chances of a collision between all of that junk orbiting the Earth increases exponentially. I think what's motivating NASA, although they're not saying it, is the possibility of a chain reaction of objects smacking into one another, producing ever more objects, and eventually enough shrapnel to take out the space station and the astronauts on board. Regardless of the reason, they apparently are going to do it. It is noted that an impact tearing apart the ISS could unleash so much debris that it would render any low Earth orbit uninhabitable for centuries. So the solution is drop the spacecraft down into what's known as the South Pacific Oceanic Uninhabited Area, the spacecraft cemetery, which has been the final resting place for upwards of 250 satellites over the years. It's roughly midway between New Zealand and South America. And no, we're not sure how the people on Easter Island feel about this. But Mr. Millen's pretty sure that regardless, they won't have much of a say in the matter. And I guess in the end, what this proves is that what goes up, indeed, must come down. And speaking of astronauts, I have to chuckle at the Shouts and Murmurs section of The New Yorker, a recent issue, I think. Author was Jay Martell. Title was Rebooted. And it was based, I believe, on the fact that Bel Air is a serialized one-hour dramatic analog of the 90s sitcom The Fresh Prince of Bel Air. That is a quote from a press release from Peacock. So Jay Martell took it and said, well, what other old TV shows could be rebooted in a more modern vein? He suggested I Dream of Jin-E, wherein astronaut Major General Anthony Nelson returns from the war in Iraq, discovering that the souvenir incense burner he picked up in Baghdad contains Jin-E, a supernatural being who manifests as a young Islamic woman. Anthony, an evangelical Christian, is torn between his feelings for Jin-E and the need to hide her from his nosy, xenophobic neighbors. But you know, one I like even better is Island, described as a tale of survival set against the ravages of global warming. 7-day trippers stranded on an uncharted desert island combat hurricanes, rising tides, radioactive vegetables, and freak storms. One, known only as the Professor, insists the disasters are the result of human-induced climate change and urges the group to find higher ground. Meanwhile, anti-science billionaire Thurston Howell III claims that climate events are random, and he builds a beachfront mansion out of bamboo. The survivors must choose sides while steering clear of the captain, a large, rage-filled white man who takes out his guilt over the desperate situation by hitting others with his hat. All right, let's take a jump into one of our perennial favorites, the good, the bad, and the ugly. According to the current issue of the week, it was a good week recently for anti-racism, with the news that Yale University is to hold an anti-racist event exploring the scourge of racism within anti-racism. The 3-week Unmasking Racism in Anti-Racism Education series will use decolonizing methods to assist in digging up the racism that is embedded in our existing anti-racism frameworks. The program's goal is to solve the puzzle of why racism continues to flourish despite ongoing anti-racism efforts. Now, see, I'm a little surprised to discover that there is racism in anti-racism education, but I certainly hope they can get in there and root it out. This is Yale, after all. And it was, on the other hand, I would say, a bad week for fresh starts with the news that Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a decree pledging Kremlin assistance to any foreigner who wants to escape the neoliberal ideas being put forward in their countries and move to Russia, where traditional values reign supreme. Well, it's nice to think of that as an option for Donald Trump, wouldn't you say?
And his maggots.
And finally, it was an ugly week a couple weeks back for a couple of things. First, AI, with the news that a couple months back, McDonald's decided to end the experimental use of AI-powered drive-through windows at more than 100 locations. This came after customers complained of frequent errors, such as adding 9 sweet teas and $222 worth of McNuggets to orders, and my personal favorite, topping an ice cream cone with bacon.
That might not have been an accident.
And we have to close by noting it certainly was an ugly week for bread and circuses. After Donald Trump suggested a couple months ago that nasty, mean migrants should be recruited to fight in a new mixed martial arts league. This earned him quite a few laughs, apparently, at the Faith and Freedom Coalition conference. Trump did point out that violent cage matches would, quote, make a lot of money, unquote.
And of course, that's the most important thing.
Of course. Anyway, what we need right now is not to make a lot of money.
Hey, wait a minute.
But rather to take a break. Let's do that. You're listening to Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett, and we've got lots more. Stick around.
Get back.